The year that this week's album was released, focus groups must have shown a preference for bespectacled white guys with toothy grins. Stephen Colbert took over The Late Show for David Letterman. This was also the year that my wife and I moved back to our home state of Texas and never again had to try and stomach the watered-down Mexican food of the Midwest. Tracks from this week's album have been featured on several television shows, including Mr. Robot, Big Little Lies, and Fleabag. The main creative force behind this week's band worked for the Postal Service, the government agency, not the Ben Gibbard side project, until her career as a full-time musician took off. Have you guessed it yet? The year was 2015. The album was Sound and Color. And the artist is Brittany Howard's band, Alabama Shakes, today on Two Dudes and Tunes. Thanks for tuning in to Two Dudes and Tunes, the podcast whose hosts don't want to fight no more. Or do we? My name is Chris Robinson, and the Statler to my Waldorf is Wood Johnson. Wood, how are you?
Hey, Chris. I'm doing pretty great this week. How about yourself?
Man, I'm lucky to be upright. work has been a bear, and I won't bore people with the details of that because it really literally would bore them. But I was glad to see Thursday evening roll around. And, you know, I feel a little bit like Lando Calrissian. You know, I've had supply problems of every kind, that kind of thing. Megan and I's debit cards haven't been working.
This deal is getting worse all the time.
We had to order new ones because of some fraudulent activity. And perpetrated on us, not by us. We're not financial criminals. But anyway, having to call banks is never that much fun. And so you got to go through the rigmarole of getting cards and activating them. And our cards didn't activate right. And so we just had to go through a lot of that dumb adulthood nonsense.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it was a bummer, to say the least. But we're through all that, and also one of the good things that actually did pop up this week, Justin and I, who I've talked about before, we're in a band doing some music, and we kind of have a tentative coffee joint gig lined up, mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited about that. We got together and practiced on Tuesday, and it was really good. It was fun hangs. I remembered all the words to the songs I was supposed to sing, which is rare. So it's been good.
And then the other this week.
Yeah. Yes. And then, I don't know. The other thing, you got to take the little victories. Megan and I have been watching the Lord of the Rings extended editions on HBO Max, not a sponsor, unfortunately. And, man, I love those movies, and I love even more the, like, 4-hour versions of each film. They are a blast.
So every year on New Year's Day, we start the director's cuts of Lord of the Rings at about 9:30 in the morning, and we play them all day. Like, that's the New Year's Day hide from society thing. And
that is a great New Year's Day.
Recently, in the last couple of years, my youngest brother, Steve, and I have started doing the extended cuts of the Hobbit films right after Thanksgiving on Black Friday.
Oh, nice.
So it's the Hobbit films and then Lord of the Rings a month later. It's quite the tradition, and it drives Tiffany nuts. She's like, you watch these every year.
Does she not like them? Man. Megan and I, we watch these like twice a year sometimes, depending on the mood that we're in. We love these movies.
So, and Tiffany, I know you're listening, so I'm sorry. Don't send us another email. She's not a big fan of the sit around and spend all day watching movies kind of thing. She wants to get out and do something. And, you know, so when I say, hey, let's watch 13 hours worth of the director's cuts of the Lord of the Rings movies, that's not something that inspires high praise and enthusiasm.
I feel thin, sort of stretched, like butter scraped over too much bread.
Oh, man, that's funny. Well, that is, I cannot identify with that because I love to just sit and watch movies.
Those movies are approaching 20 years old and they still hold up so well. The effects work and they haven't been remastered to no end, kind of like Star Wars. they're just a lot of fun. I enjoy them a lot.
They really are. Megan and I always remark on how good Gollum looks. Like, he's not a handsome guy. We're not saying he's a good looking dude, but like, there are characters that are in movies from last year that are CGI that do not look nearly as good. And I don't know if that has to do with like Andy Serkis and mocap. Like, I don't want to turn this into like Lord of the Rings podcast, but I just feel like that dude needs to be given some props and the special effects department needs to be given some huge props.
Well, it's one of those rare series of movies, at least in my fanboy obsession state of mind, that there is not a miscast person in that entire cast in any of the three movies. Every person plays their role perfectly and in a lot of ways has come to be identified by the role they played in that movie for the next 20 years. I mean, John Rhys-Davies, who played Gimli, just turned 63 or 64 today or yesterday. And there was a whole bunch of stuff about, you know, happy birthday to Gimli. And that was just because that's what everybody recognizes him as.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody even thinks of Sulla anymore, at least not from our generation.
Though Sulla was a great role for him.
Oh, fantastic.
Cue the drop. Papers.
A British tar is a sailing. I don't know the words. We're going to have to put the drop in.
This is officially a John Rhys-Davies love podcast. Yeah.
We've gone from Tolkien to John Rhys-Davies. We're moving up the time scale here. Well, what's new with you? It looks, I want to bring up something that is on your list. You completed the Marvel Cinematic Universe this week.
So funny story, going back to Tiffany not being enthusiastic about sitting and doing nothing and watching movies. I told her about 2 months ago that I had never seen any of the Marvel movies except for the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. So there's 24 movies in that cinematic universe currently, and I hadn't seen any of them other than the two Guardians movies. So we started watching them a couple months ago in timeline order, and we just finished it last night. So it's been some movies.
2 weeks straight of Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
It's taken us a couple months because some movies take us like three nights to get through. We'll be like, all right, we got to take a break. Like, you got to go to bed because you work tomorrow or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think we watched Avengers Endgame in like four nights. So
yeah, it's a mini series.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so funny.
But it was good to get done with that. And quite the accomplishment. Yeah. I feel like, hey, I'm in the know now.
Yeah, Disney needs to send you a diploma for how much work it is to like sit down through, because they cranked out like 1,000 movies in the span of 5 years. I feel like it's just like incredible.
Well, and we were looking at it. They've got like 9 more planned in the next 5 years.
Like, it's a whole thing.
Jeez, talk about making some money. I mean, that's some commitment from those actors, from the production people.
Really is. You think about somebody like, I set myself up to say names of actors and they all left my brain. But like all those people. Well,
Robert Downey Jr. played Iron Man for 21 years. Like, holy cow.
It's crazy to think it's like that long they've been at it. It's just nuts. It's too much. That's my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. So I did that. And then I guess thinking on terms of my week, my parents bought a house on the beach down in Mustang Island. And so I drove down there. It's about a 3-hour drive from my house. So we drove down there this weekend and sat on the beach and congratulated them on their purchase. Oh, and I'm hoping that to con nice. Them into letting me record episodes from their patio.
Man. We did, since the whole COVID restrictions and things are lightening, I want to be there in person to do like a like in-person podcast from the beach, because that sounds fantastic.
We should, and we should pick albums for that are beach themed, and we should pair them with whiskeys. So we should do this album goes with this whiskey.
So basically Jimmy Buffett and some whiskey is what it's going to turn into. He's the only beach themed artist I can think of currently.
Early Jack Johnson.
Hey, I forgot about Jack Johnson. Banana pancakes and whiskey. He is, isn't he?
Yep. So.
Man, that's going to be good.
And then the only other thing that when I was writing my show notes, I was like, hey, what was something that was cool that happened? I've learned as an adult that the true measure of a man is how many tools he has. And earlier this week, I went out and bought a bunch of tools for a project that I'm taking on here at the house. And so it's like, I got really excited. It was like a kid in a candy store going to the tool store and being like, okay, I need one of these and one of these. And, oh, I've always wanted this. So pretty exciting.
Oh, man, that sounds great.
So
listeners, as you know, I'm in the process of buying the house that my wife and I live in. And I definitely need to get some tools going. I'm not much of a handyman DIY guy, but I could learn. And if I had tools, I'd be even more inclined to learn. So I need to get on that boat.
When you start having to pay to repair things around your house, you'll find reasons to buy tools and watch YouTube videos. The first time a toilet broke in our house and we got a $600 quote to install a $185 toilet, I got on YouTube and learned how to install a toilet. It's like, nope.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, installation fees. That's for the birds. Unless it's like a water heater or something.
Yeah, something that's going to require a huge disposal bill too. Like,
yeah.
How do you crate this thing off at the end? But you will, as a homeowner, you will learn those joys sooner than you probably want to learn. Trust me.
Why did you do air quotes when you said joys? Is there something I don't know?
I'm just going to say waking up at 3 a.m. with your air conditioning out is no fun when you know that it's your responsibility. You can't just call the landlord and say, hey, come fix this.
Yeah, I should. Once we own the house, I should call my landlord the first time something breaks and be like, hey, how does this work?
It's going to be like that scene from Ghostbusters. Who are you going to call? Somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Well, are you ready to get into it?
Yeah, man, I'm ready to do Sound and Color.
All right, let's do it.
Sound and Color by Alabama Shakes debuted on April 17th, 2015. So this is a fairly recent album, and it's from your list, Chris. Why did this album make your list?
Well, I was talking with Megan about it the other morning, and she remembers the exact moment that we listened to this album, because I knew that she liked this band. She had their first album, Boys and Girls, on it on her phone or something, and I was just scrolling through like the new music on whatever music service we were using at the time, and noticed that Alabama Shakes had a new album, and so I played it. If I were gonna guess, I would guess it would probably be like Saturday mid-morning, because we were probably in the kitchen making like a late breakfast and just hanging out, and we put music on the radio or whatever. Mm-hmm. It made an impression on both of us such that we went out and bought the vinyl. I'm sure that we went out to Hastings, rest in peace, Hastings, and bought the vinyl. But it's fun because we bought the album pretty close to its release. And then a few short months later, we got just sick to death of tornadoes and
the threat also of death.
Yeah, the imminent threat of death, and also the imminent threat of paying like $2,000 a month for a one-bedroom apartment. Ooh. Because We lived in McPherson, Kansas, and there's a refinery in that town, mm-hmm. and they're constantly expanding it, which means that construction workers and oil workers and everybody come in with these outrageous stipends. Yep. And so unless you're prepared to buy a house, you have to compete with,
people all these flush guys with cash.
Yeah. Oh man, it was ridiculous. And so we moved, we left Kansas and moved here to Lubbock. And just 1 year later, we found out that Alabama Shakes was going to be playing in Taos, New Mexico. And not only were they playing, but my favorite band, Dawes,
which we should have been reviewing this week instead.
Well, we'll get to it. You gotta take the medicine and the sugar. But anyway, we snapped up tickets and drove up to Taos, and it was so crowded for that show that we had to book a hotel in Las Vegas, but not Las Vegas, Nevada, Las Vegas, New Mexico.
The other Vegas.
Yeah, which it felt like the other Vegas, let me tell you. But man, it was so funny because Taos is a really small, well, it's not that small, but it's like a smaller mountain town. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice up there. But parking is at a premium because the show was in kind of a new venue they've got in like a public park out there. Mm-hmm. And so people were charging like $50 an hour. Oof. Just to park in parking lots. Yeah, it was crazy. It was just, I mean, it was kind of the supply and demand thing. But there was one lady, this one saint of a lady who was, she was either offering free parking or parking for like pittance.
Yeah.
Because we like tire spinning on gravel, like pulled it, like squealed into the parking lot and parked and had just a fantastic time. It was an amazing show. I'll talk more about Brittany Howard and my opinion of her like showmanship and skill as a performer. But yeah, this album has a lot of memory tied up in it just because of that show and us discovering the music together and listening to it on countless car rides. So mm-hmm. that was my experience with it. You had a very different experience with this album.
So first off, I want to use a line you used a couple episodes ago, and that is, I didn't hate this album. That's the title of that episode that you used. Yeah. So I didn't hate this album. I remember when it came out, and I remember Alabama Shakes making a whole bunch of waves in the music industry. This album alone garnered 4 Grammy nominations and won 2 of them. So this was a very well-received album. I remember back then really thinking that it wasn't for me. It just wasn't something that hit with me immediately. And it's funny because it's about the same time that last week's Hoser album came out, you know, kind of in that same window of time. And so I was mm-hmm. in that frame of mind, but not necessarily this frame of mind. And at the time, I didn't really give it much thought. I kind of put it on the shelf and never listened to it again kind of thing and moved on. So that was my first experience with it. So that's what I got to say about that.
Well, that's all I got to say about that. Yeah, it's interesting thinking about it. These two albums, last week's and this week's, are similar but different. We've kind of been on like a blues inspired streak lately.
A very modern blues streak.
Yeah. Yeah. We did John Mayer and then Hozier and then this. And the thing that sticks out to me about this album is that it is my kind of blend of like modern and old school. Because the album they released before this, their big single off of Boys and Girls was Hold On, mm-hmm. which is very much straight ahead, blues, R&B influenced kind of stuff. But there's some more kind of out there stuff, like the track Future People. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of goes back and forth between the like long lyrical falsetto in the verses, and then the chorus is like real syncopated and kind of dancey. And so that and it's interesting, I had to really sit down and think about what I liked about this album that I didn't in Hozier, because like you said, they both came out around very similar time frames.
And they occupy very similar sonic spaces.
Yeah. Yeah. Both have like charismatic lead people that play, like Brittany Howard plays a lot of instruments herself. I was actually looking at the instrumentation of her most recent solo album,
Jamie.
Mm-hmm. And she's like all over the place on the credits because it was very much her playing the bass and the keys and guitar and singing, and I think even the drums. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Part of me thinks that maybe it's just a matter of taste. Like, I like Brittany Howard's work. I don't like Hozier's as much. What was it about this album that didn't jive for you? Because we're kind of on different, we're on opposite sides of the same coin, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. So I will preface this by saying I really like Boys and Girls, the album that they came out with before this. And yep. I felt like as I tried to synthesize what I didn't like about this album was that it was just too experimental. And that was a critique that I had of, I'm drawing a blank on it, but one of the other albums from your list that just muddied the waters between being, you know, a true example of its style and being just too much of a twist. For me, I think that this album is really tight. It's well produced. It's mixed really well. Like, I cannot fault any of the production value of this album.
Yeah.
Where my big problem with this album stems is the lyrical content and the musicality of Brittany Howard's voice. It just does not work for me. Where last week I defended Hozier's kind of gross imagery because it was more about the musicality of his voice as an instrument in the mix, I felt like Brittany Howard's voice just detracted from the mix in these songs. And I felt like the lyrical content was just kind of lazy overall. I took a bit more of a data analytics look to this because I was trying to find something that I really liked that wasn't just an emotional, like, gut reaction. And I'm only
in doubt, trust the numbers.
Yes, exactly. It's like, remove the gut, go with the brain. And so Sound and Color, the title song from this album, has 168 words in it lyrically. And of those 168 words, only 50 of them are distinct words, which means, you know, the vast majority of the words in this are just repeated words over and over and over again. I Don't Want to Fight No More, the next song on this album, has the phrase, and I'm not making this up, the phrase, I don't want to fight no more, 31 times if you include the time that it's in the chorus, or in the one of the verses. 30 times, just repeated over and over and over again. And it's like, okay, like, that song's really catchy, but the lyrics are a real turnoff on it. Like, just mute that. I don't need it.
But Wood, she doesn't want to fight no more.
Well, and so
that's what she's trying to tell you.
You know, it's funny. So I read the lyrics today, kind of going through this. Yeah, and that song does have a really strong message in the verses. You know, I believe it's the first verse where she doesn't want to fight to save a relationship anymore. And at the next verse, it's, you know, I don't want to fight to save my life anymore. You know, she's on the verge of giving up. And there's a really strong message in those two verses, but it's interspersed by I don't want to fight no more as the backing lyric behind every line she says. And then repeated, you know, umpteen times at the end of the song, that just kind of, that heavy repetition, that reliance on heavy repetition cheapens the overall feeling to me. And one of the things that I've liked about Dallas Green or Bon Iver, guys who had similar issues with their lyrics or music, was that they didn't depend so heavily on just repeating the same thing over and over again. And you and I both grew up in the worship music setting. How many times can you repeat the same line over and over again? Because it's easy to get a crowd to do it, that it just grates on you. And that's kind of the feeling I walked away with this album with. And it kind of, for the first few times I listened to it, I listened to this album 7 times this week. And the final time, I actually listened right before we came on, and I played it for Tiffany because I needed her to be like my sounding board of reason, to be like, am I wrong in what I'm about to say about this? Like, you need to listen to it. So while we were cooking dinner, she listened to it. No joke. This isn't a dig at you or anything. She goes, does Chris do drugs?
Oh, man, I don't.
I said, for the record, no, he's about as square as they come. Like,
yeah, unless ibuprofen counts. I mean, I'm full disclosure, people, I'm drinking a beer. So I guess technically alcohol is a drug, but
they always said that alcohol wasn't a solution. Well, I have a chemical proof that it is, actually.
It is for sure. If you ask a scientist, they will say, yeah, that's the solution. But and also other drugs I do include caffeine daily. Daily intake of drinkable energy.
Ooh, it's terrible but wonderful at the same time. It's like freedom in a cup.
But yeah, it's it's funny. I do. So repetition in lyrics is definitely a double-edged sword, because what it comes down to is that you are selling your song based more on what you can do with your voice than what the lyrics are. You kind of see this in movies. Like, they're are lines that you could imagine a different actor delivering, and they would be terrible because whoever delivered the line put, you know, the right stank on, you know, for lack of a nicer term.
It's funny you mention that, because having just completed the Marvel Cinematic Universe and we were watching, you know, the ending movie, the final movie, basically every sentence of that movie in the dialogue has like a comma for like a dependent clause. And you can guess what the punchline to that is on everyone. Like, Tiffany was laughing at me last night because I'd never seen the movie before, but I could guess based on those character arcs what the next line was based on how they'd set it up. It's like, slow pitch it, that it one.
It becomes predictable, though. And so I, you know, like, so it's funny because you and I both noticed the sparseness of these lyrics, because it's a very different, not to just continually bring it back to the album that we just listened to, but Hozier's lyrics were a lot wordier
and a lot broader. Like, the song did not end where it started. It was all over the place.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about Brittany Howard is they do complete a circle. Like, every song kind of ends its own little story and ties up neatly.
And I think this is like most of our disagreements on this podcast, I think this comes down to a difference of opinion, because I read through the lyrics before we got on, and I can definitely see, I mean, especially in Don't Want to Fight No More, but like, these songs are not lyrically dense. And I think most some of that is probably just Brittany Howard's proclivities as a songwriter, but also the band is pulling a lot of the weight as far as the emotional tone goes. And so the elements that are left to really draw you in are the lyrics. I mean, you have three things, basically: the lyrics, the instrumentation, and the delivery of the lyrics. And so if you're kind of cold on two out of three of those things, then there's not that much left for you to enjoy. So I can, you know, thinking about it from your perspective, I can see how some of the repetition rubbed you the wrong way, because if there's nothing about the delivery of the same line 10 times that draws you in, it's going to stick out more that she's saying, I don't want to fight no more, you know, 10 or 50 times.
Well, I don't want to beat it up too much. You're mentioning the fact that she's a powerful performer. I can see that. And I don't want to change the subject too much because it's later on in our show notes. I watched one of the music videos for this album, which happened to be Don't Want to Fight No More. Mm-hmm. And seeing her perform that song in that music video was incredibly powerful. So mm-hmm. I could see how live, if she's hitting on all eight cylinders, she would be a dynamic, engaging performer. And maybe my opinion would be a little bit different of this album if I had seen it live.
I gotta say, as a performer, she is just like gangbusters. It was really fun because when we went to go see that show in Taos, she was having problems with her in-ears. Mm-hmm. I think they were going out on her because she would put one in or take it out. And eventually she just ripped the in-ears out of the pack on her hip and like chucked them away. And it was real, really funny because like
real punk rock.
It was, but, and you know, for a square like me, real punk rock is like, oh my God, it's like seeing a unicorn in the wild. But, what some poor stagehand had to go like scrambling after them because I'm sure they're expensive. but she did not miss a beat. Like, I don't know if she just could hear if there were some like stage monitors or if she was just going on like what she could hear, the house sound outdoors or whatever. But she is one of those performers who really just brings it. I mean, I've only seen her once, right? So small sample size. But yeah, you and I had very different reactions to her singing. Because I had kind of slept on this album for a long time. Like I said, it's an album that Megan and I have listened to a lot. And so I had kind of forgotten about it, to be honest with you, until a few weeks ago. Megan, my wife, was like, is Alabama Shakes on there? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, I mean, they should be. I just haven't listened to that album in a while. And so I listened to it and put it on the list. But her voice for me is the thing that draws me in. But you didn't have talk a little bit about that, because I think it's so interesting that I say this probably every other week, but we listen to the same album and come away with such like radically different opinions.
Well, and generally we bring it back around and find something in common so that our ratings end up similar. We'll save that for later, I'm sure. But for me, when I listened to her voice in this recording, and I did not feel this way about their previous album. So this mm-hmm. album, and I admit I have not listened to all of Jamie, but I've listened to the first three or four tracks on it to get a taste for what it's like. And I didn't feel that way about her voice on Jamie, at least the parts that I've heard. But on this album, you know, this qualifying, just this sample of her work, I felt like her voice was pretty shrill and kind of annoying, like it grated on me. And at one point in the week, I compared her to Fran Drescher as the nanny, which is doing a great disservice to her. Like, I admit that, like, it's not the right way to perceive her voice, because it's not a good characterization, but that's the way I felt listening to it. Listening to her sing on this album was a lot of work for me. Let me just say that.
First of all, Fran Drescher is a GD national treasure.
Yes, she is. I'm not denying it.
I just wanted to throw that in there because I had never seen an episode of The Nanny until I married Megan, and she really likes that show, and we found a good deal for the DVDs on it. And I was like, oh geez, Fran Drescher, like, why do I have to watch this? And after like episode one, I was like, oh man, she's so charming. She's hilarious.
Well, I'm sorry I had to get tough with you, but you had to learn.
She is the 10-year earlier version of Michael Scott from The Office. Like, there's something about him that is so, like, cringe, but so charming, like, on the flip side of it.
Yeah,
and that's the way she is. So those two characters this are a national treasure.
This has been an episode of NannyCast. You can find us every Wednesday on your streaming devices. I see where you're coming from. She swings for the fences on this album. And so I think if it works for you, it really works for you. But if it doesn't work for you, it really doesn't work for you. Because like when I think of shrill singers, I think of somebody like Madonna or Britney Spears. Oh,
they're unbearable. They will never be on our list.
Axl Rose, also one of my absolute least favorite voices. Don't at me because I don't care. Axl Rose is terrible.
He commits the same crime, though. He repeats the same line over and over and over again in the same terrible tone.
For 5 minutes straight does not constitute a song. No, but, you know, late era Led Zeppelin, like, after Robert Plant has pretty much like shredded his voice box. Mm-hmm. Like, so I guess, I don't know. I don't even know if it bears bringing up because I don't want to just sit here and be like, no, you're wrong. I don't like your opinion. I just had a very different experience because what came off as kind of shrill for you, I found really, I don't know, like all the soulful stuff that she does and her like range of expression I found really compelling, but I don't know. I can see what you mean just in that the intensity is dialed up to 10.
Well, and I will give her this to her credit. She does not do it poorly. She is a talented vocalist. It's just the tone and meter of her voice just don't work for me on this album.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to kind of wrap that up.
Yeah. It is going back just briefly to like the instrumental part of this, because we've talked a lot about Brittany Howard's voice because it's very much the set piece of this album. But one of the other things that I really liked about it that I had forgotten about, you know, because I just hadn't listened to it in a while, is instrumentally, this band does something. I don't know. There's some kind of je ne sais quoi, to be like really dorky about it, that I can't quite place. I think something about it that really sucks me in is the marriage of like old school blues tones and textures with some just way out there stuff. Like on this album, there's a lot of just like clean guitar with a lot of reverb on it. Mm-hmm. You know, something you might hear in like the Muscle Shoals area. Like this band is from Alabama. And so they have a lot of that kind of R&B heritage in their sound, but they also go like way out there, especially towards the latter half of the album. There's a lot of echoey fuzzed out guitar and, you know, just really interesting modern takes on a really vintage sound. And the whole album is super funky too. Like the rhythm section for this band is really great. And so that was a thing that for me, really jived well with her voice. And I felt like was super coherent and cohesive. The whole thing, like each track is different, but they all come together for me to form like a really perfect whole.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because as I was driving around yesterday, I was trying to really bring my thoughts together on this album. And I found myself asking the question, what is it I like about this? Because I'll tell you what, if there wasn't something that I liked and could put my finger on, I'd have stopped listening after the first or second listen, because it was a lot of work to listen to it for me.
Yeah.
But I made it through 7 complete playthroughs. And the one thing I can put my finger on is just being phenomenal is the layers of depth of instrumentation that Brittany Howard and the rest of the band have been able to put together on this album. The ability to tell a story through just the instruments alone made this worth listening to for me. I really, really enjoy the instrumentation to every track on this album. Mm-hmm. It's just the lyrics and the delivery of the lyrics that don't work for me. The same way that Hozier's voice didn't work for you last week.
Yeah. So. Yeah. This is really like your version of what I went through last week. I want to take like we're discussing this music at each other, everybody. We're just hucking 33 RPMs at each other, hoping to draw blood. But I want to take a minute since we're talking about the band. Something that I thought was kind of fun. I didn't bother going too much into the like history of this band just because they have a very much they let me start over. They have a story that is really familiar to most people. They met when they were young. They got together and started making music, and it clicked for them, and they brought it to us, and we ate it up. Mm-hmm. But the things that they did for work, like all 4 of these band members, I don't know, something about it seemed really funny. They're just working kids making music. So Brittany Howard, she's the lead singer, rhythm guitarist. She was a fry cook and then a postal worker, mm-hmm. which I mentioned in the intro. Steve Johnson, their drummer, worked at a nuclear plant.
Not my little brother, Steve Johnson.
I was wondering if you're going to bring that up. And their bassist, Zach Cockrell, he worked at an animal clinic, mm-hmm. which I think is really funny.
And he is literally one day older than me. Like his birth date was on the Wikipedia page. I was like, hey, you're one day older than me.
We have to stop checking the ages of these people because I think it's just going to be super depressing. Like whenever Megan and I watch baseball on TV, we're just like, oh God, all these people are in their like lower 20s. We're over here like pushing 30, like, oh, life is so hard.
Like I would be retired if I was a pro athlete.
Oh man, I would have so much money if I were a retired pro athlete. But instead I'm making podcast money. And then the lead guitarist Heath Fogg painted houses. So you've got like a painter, a nuclear plant technician, a veterinarian, and a fry cook / postal worker. I just thought it was really fun, like a fun, like all American dream story of 4 really disparate people who came together and made this music.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, it's neat. And they have, to hear, so I read an article, kind of skimmed an article about why Alabama Shakes isn't really around right now. And a lot of it just has to do with Brittany Howard wanting to tell some intensely personal stories that she couldn't figure out how to write with a group. Mm-hmm. But to hear her talk about her time with this band, they really were like brothers and sisters in arms. You know, and so I think that's an element of their band that isn't really super evident unless you read a Wikipedia article, but I read about and really liked.
I like from what I read too, that they're very clear about the fact that it's only on hiatus. They aren't broken up. There is no reason for them not to get back together again. And they all kind of talk positively of the chance that they will get back together and make more music. So that's always a positive. This isn't the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. Hope not yet. Hopefully it doesn't turn that way. But, you know, to bring it back, like that chemistry is really on display here. And so I think because the lyrics and the singing were such a big draw for me, it was just icing on the cake of an already super solid band. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the singing, just to wrap this up before we go into reviews, the singing is a big part of it. You know, we modern music and even music going back centuries, like vocals have always been the main thing people are listening for. And so if that falls flat to you, that's going to color your feeling. Like I mentioned Axl Rose, Guns N' Roses, if they had anybody else, anyone else as their lead singer, they'd probably be one of my favorite bands because I love Slash. I love the riffs, but I cannot. I've tried to listen to Appetite for Destruction. I put it on my phone and listen to it for weeks at a time. Nothing. I just can't get into it. Like I have to edit out all of Slash's solos into like a supercut and just listen to those.
Would be epic.
Oh man, it would be, because that dude is so good. But that's why there are no Guns N' Roses albums on my list, is because the singer doesn't clash with me, or maybe doesn't jive with me, rather.
Maybe I'll put one on my list just to spite you.
Oh, do it. Dude, bring it on. Because I'll pretend I'm not listening to Axl Rose sing, and I'll just listen to Slash tear it up.
Before we talk about reviews, I did want to talk a little bit about the music videos for this album. This is a feature that we have not routinely done, just because most albums don't have very good music videos. Like, let's be honest, great albums. But I generally, when we do an album that's a little bit more experimental in nature, or it's obvious that the musicians are more forward thinking and trying to put a twist on things, I generally try and watch at least one music video from it. And there were two music videos produced for this officially for this album. One of them was Sound and Color, which makes sense because it's the title track and the big single from it. And the music video has absolutely nothing to do with the song itself, but it's a guy who wakes up from hibernating in space, and there's been a computer malfunction on his spaceship, and he's been asleep for 500 years.
That's amazing.
He's adrift in space with the life support systems waning, and he's coming to grips with the fact that he's 500 years old and he's going to die soon. And so he's having flashbacks to the family of his that has been dead for, you know, 400 and something years at this point. And every time they use the phrase sound and color, there's this big starburst of color that's doing the spectral map of the sound of Britney's voice. And it's flashing from his eyes. Like, it is a really cool music video and has nothing to do with the actual song, but it is amazing.
Did Terrence Malick direct this? That sounds awfully like...
It had a very Stanley Kubrick feel to it, like the look of
it. Gotcha.
Yeah. Actually, what I thought it was a direct ripoff of, there's an underrated movie that won South by Southwest in 2008 or 2009 called Moon. And it is...
Oh, that's a great movie.
One of the greatest movies ever made. And it had of vibes of that. Like, the spaceship kind of looked like that. And
that's super cool.
So good. But so that music video was really interesting. And then earlier in the episode, I talked about seeing Brittany Howard perform I Don't Want to Fight No More in a music video. Well, what makes this music video interesting is... it's a one-shot recording of a studio session of this song. And so it's her and the whole band in one pretty cramped studio space recording it, and it's in one take. So the whole song, it's basically somebody with their iPhone could have recorded this, and they're just panning around the room, and when the guitar solo starts, they've got the action timed up just right to be in on the guitar, and then it's over to the drums. Like, it's all over the place. In one shot.
That is really neat.
Coming from a video production background, anytime somebody can do something in one shot without any edits, without any cuts, is a true sign of talent. And seeing her perform that song, which arguably she's doing the most vocally in that song, and she is playing a mean rhythm lick that whole song. Like, she is into it. convinced me that, okay, this isn't a matter of her being a bad musician. Like, yeah, this is obviously a great band and probably would be amazing to see live, having seen
they really,
6 minutes of them just killing it in this studio space. But I thought it was also interesting that they decided to release such a raw thing as the official music video for that track, which is a sign to, you know, how much they're willing to kind of put a spin on the norm for a commercially produced and released music video versus the first track, which was Kubricked to the millions of dollars. Yeah. And then here we've got enough money for an iPhone. Let's do this right quick.
Yeah, that's so funny. I need to check those out. You're so much better at checking out music videos than I am. I forget the music videos exist.
My entire background, though, is from how do you put music to video? And so that's kind of where my mind goes first is, well, what'd they do with the video for this? There you go.
I need to check that out.
Like, that's how would I cut a montage for this? And then you see what they actually did and you're like, huh?
Oh man.
It's like, I suck at life. That's what this means.
No, you don't suck. You're just not on the accelerated track like so many of the people that whose albums we review tend to be on.
This is true. Well, yeah. I think we've talked about the album. Let's talk about the critical reception to it, Chris. In prepping for this section, I, of course, went to Metacritic and pulled the reviews for this, and it got an 80 out of 100. So, obviously, most people like this album a lot. It got 30 reviews for that Metacritic rating. This album ended up winning, or being nominated for 4 Grammys. It won 2, and Alabama Shakes as a whole has been nominated for 9. So, overall, this is a well-loved band, and a lot of people have a lot of great things to say about them. What did you see?
So I looked briefly for some more critical, but you know, negative reviews, and I couldn't really find any because I don't want to. I mean, look, this is our opinions, so I don't feel the need necessarily to be even-handed or unbiased because we're just talking about how we feel about our favorite music. But I was looking for negative reviews from critics and couldn't really find any. And so I'm just prefacing this to say I'm not trying to be like, rah, rah, look at this band. They are truly the greatest.
Trust me, Chris, if I could find a really bad review of this album, I would have dug it up.
I'm sure you would have. But they were all pretty positive. Ryan Domble of Pitchfork gave this an 8.1. And he said, this is stadium soul with one eye peeking toward another galaxy while hands and feet and throats desperately try to suss out life here on Earth. And Natasha, oh man.
Go for it. Names. Go for it. Let's see it.
Natasha Oftendillions.
We'll insert buzzer either way. It'll either be a ding or a wrong.
I cannot have done that right. So apologies to Natasha, who writes for Spin. She gave this a 7 out of 10 and said, confidence oozes out of every note that pours from singer Brittany Howard's mouth, but it doesn't translate to a big-headed ego. And most importantly, they managed to channel a spectrum of musical influences from Southern soul to glam rock without retreading the well-worn paths that others are content to glide on. And I picked those two because both those quotes kind of sum up what I loved about this album, which was that contrast between 60s R&B soul, 70s arena rock, and also just their own kind of indie, echoey spin on those genres. Mm-hmm. And I think that is probably what attracts most people, is that it does have kind of the retro feel of stuff you hear on classic rock radio all the time, but it is also kind of uniquely its own thing. And so that's what the critics noticed, and that's what I noticed. Do you want to weigh in on our review?
Absolutely, I do.
Stop, I see you sharpening those knives.
Hey, you know, every now and then. So before we start, let me remind everyone of the review scheme that we've patent-pended and trademarked, and we have a whole team of lawyers ready to defend at any moment, so don't go copying us.
They are actually standing behind me right now, sharpening their knives, just exactly. Waiting for you to infringe, so you watch it.
Yeah, so there you go. So we use a 1-to-6 string guitar string review. So one string being not great, and or at least not great for me. Let me clarify that. And six strings being the greatest album in my estimation ever made. So I'm going to go ahead and go first because I feel like you deserve the last word on this album.
Well, that's kind of you.
So I'm going to keep it relatively short. This album did have its bright moments for me, like we mentioned. The instrumentation of this album, the arrangement, the depth of the layers of the music, especially for such a small band. I mean, four core players mm-hmm. were able to create something that I think musically is pretty special. And I don't know that this album, though, is going to be something that I listen to and retain regularly. It's not something I'm going to save on my phone and come back to. If they ever sold just a instrumental version of this album, if they muted all the vocal tracks and just said, here's the Alabama Shakes sound and color instrumental album, this would be a 5-out-of-6 string album for me. There's a lot to like from the instrumentation and the way that they've arranged it and the way the tracks flow into each other cleanly. But then you bring in the vocal issues that I had with it, the fairly cheap, lazy-seeming lyrics, the vocal delivery, the musicality of Brittany Howard's voice that did not work on this album for me, that really just brought it down. And generally, when I'm listening to music, when I'm trying to experience music, I want the album to end, and I want to be energized to listen to it again. I want to dive back in or listen to the next album in their anthology, you know, whatever, you know, powers me up. And I found myself doing something I rarely ever do when I listened to this album. And that is when this album ended, I turned off the radio. I just sat in silence afterwards. Wow. I didn't want to listen to anything else. And I was worn out kind of by this album. And back in the past, when I worked in live event production and doing live music events, there was different ways, you know, different groups and different musicians would come through. And after you were done mixing them, either you'd be energized and ready to go, or you'd be wore out and done, even though all you had done was mix the audio for it. And this was just one of those experiences where it didn't work for me. And because of those problems that I had with the lyrics and the problems that I had with the voice, vocal delivery, it pains me to say that that takes this 5-out-of-6 album and it really makes it a one string experience for me. It's the only album in the last couple of years that I've listened to and that I've just straight up turned off the radio afterwards. And that hurts. Like, it's the first time I think in any of our episodes that any of us has given a one string review to anything. And I feel bad because so much of this album is worth listening to, is good. And I do enjoy elements of it, but for me, I've got to call it the way I feel it at the end of it, and it's a one string event.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be true to how you feel about it. Nobody is looking to our reviews going like, boy, they better.
And before you give your review, I want to say too that I don't want to sway anybody with that. If this works for you, and if it speaks to you, and if it's something you love, then by all means, please love it, because I think Alabama Shakes is a great group. And I was excited when we picked this album last week. When it came out of the randomizer, I was like, oh, yeah, Alabama Shakes. And then I remembered.
So, well, that's the thing. I say it probably every week. If it's not for you, it's not for you. And there's no point in doing this podcast if the other person lies about it, like, oh yeah, it was great, I love it, because most people are going to see through that anyway. But
it made for an interesting discussion.
Yeah, it did. And I enjoy all our discussions, but I think there you learn a little bit more about the music you love when somebody is confronting you with things about it that they don't get. Mm-hmm. So I had the exact opposite experience with this album that you did. Obviously, it's one of my favorites, so I've listened to it maybe longer and more thoroughly. Not more thoroughly, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. It's had more time.
But anyway, it's percolated. But where you heard shrillness and repetition, I heard a lot of soul and honesty. And having seen Brittany Howard live, I can testify that she brings the thunder when she performs. I find her voice electrifying for its range, captivating for its expressive ability. To my ear, the swagger that she brings on stage carries through in her recorded voice. We talked about the instrumentals. The band is almost as engaging to me as Brittany Howard's singing. The band is cooking, and they produce themselves, which I think is really cool. Like, they knew what would work for them, and they went out and did it. I listen to a lot of music at work, as I've said, and I was very often bobbing my head to a lot of the groovy tunes on this album. And not to review this by like dissing other artists, but I'm going to do that. People like Jack White and Dan Auerbach kind of feel like they're competing for which guitar can have more fuzz pedals on it. And who can be more cool and old school. But to me, Brittany Howard just kind of exudes cool. She writes compelling songs about growing up poor in Alabama, yearning to be a better person, and the travails of her romantic life. There are a lot of emotional tones struck on this album, and I thought that all of these songs were assembled in an order and a presentation that pushes all the right buttons for me personally. Mm-hmm. So I got to give this a perfect score, 6 out of 6 strings straight up for Alabama Shakes Sound and Color.
Well, that is awesome, Chris. I have to say, this is the first time that we've been on absolute polar opposites of the spectrums. And I feel
we really did go.
I feel like we should have a name for when that happens. There has to be some sort of like the two dudes paradox or something we got to come up with. And maybe our listeners can send us some submissions for what it should be when we come out just complete opposite ends of the scale.
If y'all have any suggestions for like what kind of a title we can assign this, because you know if we have the same favorite track or least favorite track, it's like a daily double, obviously. But there's got to be something for this because it's a pretty entertaining phenomenon.
This is the first time I've ever felt that strongly about a review, and I think you felt the same way about yours. So the fact that it's that opposite, it's like, all right, we got to do something about this. We got to recognize this.
Yeah. This is special listeners. So if you have any ideas, hit us up on email.
Yeah, or Instagram or Facebook or any of those places.
Yeah, I will do my best to reply, and maybe we'll bring it up. But we've gotten our reviews done here. Did you have a favorite track, or was it all just a matter of like, just not for me? Because I even though we try to bring up a favorite and least favorite, like, if you didn't like any of them, you don't have to pick a favorite, I would say.
So, again, I really like the instrumentation of all the songs on this album. And most of the time on albums, I end up doing kind of the sissy, like, weasel my way out of it by naming, like, 4 tracks that I really like and then giving you one. But that's my way of, like, giving, you know, some recognition to tracks that I really enjoyed.
Absolutely.
I really bagged on I Don't Want to Fight No More for its lyrical content earlier. But listening through this album while we were making dinner earlier, it kind of dawned on me, but that's the song that musically sticks with me the most. And thankfully, not because of the repetitive Don't Want to Fight No More lyric. But it's also the one that the verses that it does have that aren't repeating each other it actually did connect with me in some way. So I'm going to say that that's the one that I liked most.
Nice.
But saying that, I'm also not going to give a least favorite song because I feel like that's just being mean at this point. We know I didn't like this one so much. So the one I liked the most is I Don't Want to Fight No More. How about you? Gotcha. What was your favorite and least favorite?
So my favorite track is easily Dune.
That's a great Dune, track. Excuse me.
I've got Frank Herbert on the brain.
No sandworm for you.
Yeah. The music must flow. But I really like this band does quiet, loud dynamics all the time. Like that's like a really popular thing. But I like the way Brittany Howard's voice, whatever it is that she does to go between like really soft spoken stuff towards like just, you know, getting really big during the choruses or whatever. I really like that in the song. But my favorite thing about the song is the end, because it's got a guitar part that reminds me so forcibly of the Beatles track She's So Heavy. Mm-hmm. It's this really big, overdriven kind of doom-laden guitar part. And it commits one of your seven deadly sins, I think, which is just like fades out. But it fades out to like recording of like wind.
Yeah, you know, and I kind of like, gave that track a pass because like of the environment that it faded into. That was kind of a cool effect.
It's real neat.
You don't get that very often in produced albums. So
and you know, one of the things I read about Brittany Howard, one of her influences is one of my other favorite bands, Pink Floyd. And so there are some slight touches of that kind of, I mean, the album is very psychedelic as a whole, but some of those kind of production choices I really like. As far as the least favorite track, I think the closer on this album, Over My Head, it's not a song I would pick as a closer per se, but I'm just picking it because I like all of them and it's the one I liked the least. I had kind of the inverse problem that you did where I was like, I like all of these, but I'll pick this one because it's my quote unquote least favorite.
Well, now that I've kind of killed this album in my mind, I do want to say one vocalization effect that I actually really liked was the opening to Don't Want to Fight No More, where she starts with that like prolonged yell sustain thing that was very reminiscent of Michael Jackson, like not gonna lie. And that worked for me. Like that it's first so verse of that song really worked. I had high hopes for this listening to it again when that was the second track. I was like, oh yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah, that's Megan and I get excited every time that plays over, you know, like the car speakers or whatever. We love it. All right. Well, that's it. I think we have talked about this album about as much as anyone wants to listen. Do you want to head into the kitchen and eat a cookie with the Oracle?
I do. So let's see here. We're going to be picking from my list this time, which when I look at it is 35 tracks deep at the moment. I went through and did a little bit of self-editing last week.
Oh, you weeded some out.
I did. I want to add some more, but I don't want to water down the chance of albums that I really like making it to the show. Oh,
that's smart.
So yeah, I went through and kind of self-moderated myself. And so let's see out of 35 what we get. Track or list item 15. You just made fun of this artist in your review. We're listening to the White Stripes Elephant album from 2003.
I did just make fun of Jack White. He's real talented. I like his music, but he is also kind of like the biggest target for my like white guy doing the blues ire. So
well,
that'll be fun.
Let's just say I remember when this album came out and I absolutely loved this album and it was a huge hit with my brothers as well, which it's a rare day when all three of us end up liking one album. So there was a lot of time in the big homeschool van driving around with that thing blaring on the radio and my parents just putting up with it because it would keep us quiet.
That's awesome. Well, I'm excited about it because I cast shade on him, but Jack White is real talented. All right, folks. Well, thank you so much for listening. If you have been enjoying our show, please rate it and review it. That does us a lot of good as far as knowing how y'all feel about it. And it also, you know, we get enough reviews, Apple takes notice, something could happen. So we would appreciate it. And also, you know, just to pander to your inflated ego, if you're anything like us, you're just dying for some limelight. And we might read your comments or your reviews on air, so to speak.
Yeah, and to add one more thing to that, one of the podcasts I listen to every week plays audio clips from listeners as a way of doing feedback. So if you want to record a note in the Voice Memos app on your phone and send it to our email address, twodudesandtunes@gmail.com, we'll be happy to include it in our show to get some feedback on our episodes. And, you know, you never know, you might be famous just like us. Also, hit us up on Instagram or Facebook. We're pretty active over there. Chris manages that, and we're all over it. Tell us what you thought about Sound and Color. Hey, we had a great time with you this week. Don't forget to tune in next week when a 7-Nation Army can't hold us back.